Oh, hello, everyone. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over the pop culture we all love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are digital strategist Winter Mitchell.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Journalist Margaret Wappler.
Hi, Guy.
Hey, Margaret. And academic and DJ Oliver Wang.
How's it going?
I'm doing all right. It's exciting to have for the second week in a row all of us back together
yes.
again.
Like the Beatles.
It is.
It's very synergistic.
Go fuck yourself, Pete Best. His name was Pete Best, right?
Yeah, sure.
You got it.
Ouch.
And by which I, of course, mean Karen Tongson.
Oh, Karen.
She's holding her fist up in the sky right now, shaking at you.
Every week we start off the show by taking a question from a listener about our own pop culture tastes. This week, I want you guys to tell me, if you had to choose, and I am making you choose, which Spice Girl would you see yourself as? Winner.
I'm going to say Totality Spice, because I feel like I'm a part of all of them. And it didn't even dawn on me until recently how obnoxious it is that the black one was called Scary Spice.
Yes.
No, okay, that's not okay.
That's not okay. And it wasn't okay then, but I was willing to let it go because zig-a-zig-ah. So, I let it be what it is. But I always feel like I'm kind of, you know, I'm a little bit of all of them. I'm not going to name each attribute.
No, I'm going to need you to go through all of them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, if you're going to be Totality Spice, you have to summon all of them.
Okay, so when it comes to posh, yes, I feel that I'm a little bit bougie. I'm ghetto fabulous. So I like some. I turn my nose up at a couple of things. And my favorite is when in the Spice World, when she walks past the little obstacle course thing in her dress, because I'm like, nope, not doing that today. And then when it comes to Jerry,
That was during the montage for Never Give Up on the Good Times.
Never give up on the good. Okay. So then Jerry, I think I've got that like kind of like. She's always like winking at the camera.
Was that Ginger?
Yes.
That's Ginger.
Yes.
Mm.
What about
wink.
Baby?
Baby. Okay, maybe I'm not Totality Spice. So then there's Scary Spice. I'm a three-quarter Spice. So then it's Scary, obviously. I'm like, you know, badass, talk a lot
no,
of shit.
No, Winter, there are five of them, which leads to a horrible, horrible joke we don't even want to approach.
Go for it. Just pit us with the punchline.
No, no. Oliver has a grim look on his face.
I'm guessing I know what the joke
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I think so. I do too.
I missed it. It went right over my head.
I forgot there were five Spice Girls. So
it's terrible.
If you're a 3/5 Spice. Anyways, we can just leave it there.
God damn it.
Margaret, which Spice Girl are you?
Well, if Winter's going to be Totality Spice, I'm just going to be Wiki Spice, because the best part of this question for me, and thank you for this question, Rachetacular, but the best part of it for me was going and looking it up on Wiki, because I could not remember who was who, and realizing that some crazed soul has written like 27,000 words on Spice Girls on Wikipedia, which is why I love Wikipedia.
I'm sorry. A Margaret Wappler, like, occupied with music and gender, going through college at the same time that the Spice Girls came upon us, was not overwhelmed by them as a phenomenon?
Despite the heading in Wiki called Girl Power, I was not so convinced. But you guys can tell me which Spice Girl you think I am.
Ooh.
You know, I feel like
I can tell you a Golden Girl and Sex and the City Girl. Spice is going to be pretty tough at this point.
I know. Okay, I read all the descriptions and I just couldn't relate.
But Winter, let's do that. I mean, clearly Margaret is a Miranda.
Yes.
A Miranda Carey hybrid.
I was going to say a Miranda Charlotte hybrid.
Oh,
okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. What Golden Girl is she? I'm going to say a Dorothy. And I'm going to say Spice-wise, surprisingly.
Dorothy.
Baby. Baby or baby Ginger.
I was going to say that.
I am the youngest member of my family.
Yeah.
Yes. I do have baby vibes.
I can give you a baby Ginger. Dorothy, I'm stuck with on a little bit. You strike me more as a Blanche.
Thank you. Right.
Yes.
Oliver, which Spice Girl are you?
So I couldn't even be bothered to wiki it up. I found this question. I like that it presumes that we know anything about it, or that I would know anything about the Spice Girls.
And Oliver has his car keys in his hand. Like, it is not. He has no time for it today.
I'm about to drive out of here on the basis of the question. So, yeah, I didn't even bother to wiki it. So I guess you could just call me really indifferent, or I could give a F less spice about this. No, I mean, no. I mean, really, this is no shots at the Ratchtacular for the question. I appreciate the question, but I got no answer for you. But I like this. You can tell me who would spice.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we're going to have to decide.
Scary.
All right.
Or sporty. Oliver likes sports.
Is there a sporty spice?
Yes.
Okay. See, I didn't know
this. No, but winner.
Ooh, I forgot all about sporty.
Yeah. How could you leave her out?
Shit.
She's the missing fifth one.
No, I'm going to say posh, because Oliver's answer to a situation he doesn't want to engage in is just not to engage
exactly.
in it.
Like,
that is very
not
refined.
Be more Victoria Beckham of you.
He chooses his battles. I personally am a scary ginger hybrid.
Yeah, I see that.
I am aggressive and playful, but also like ginger had the like type A Thatcherite feminism that of course appeals to me.
Yeah. Mm. I think you really hit the nail on the head on that one, Guy.
I see it.
Yeah, it's the one area of music that I can speak about authoritatively. thanks to, I can't figure out whether it's Rachetacular because her name is Rachel, or if it's Ratchtacular because she ratchet.
I like Ratchtacular.
I like Ratchtacular.
Yeah. Let's give it to her.
In the Max Fun Reddit for that question. You can give us your answers on the Max Fun Reddit of the Pop Rocket Facebook group, and Winter and I will be there very aggressively having opinions about all of your decisions. Coming up in this week's show, we'll be talking about canceled TV shows. Plus, we'll each share our own latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Margaret Wappler, what are you all about this week?
Well, I'm all about the crazy New York Times expose on the nail salon industry. I was out in New York when that story broke, and pretty much everyone I had dinner with talked about this story. It was just one of those crazy blow the doors open on an industry kind of story where we learned that these immigrant women of color workers are being just completely exploited in ways that I don't think any of us really imagined. Although I do have to say that I only get manicures or pedicures very occasionally, but I have thought before, like, this is awfully cheap for what's going on. Do you know what I mean? Like, it always seemed a little suspicious. So I was just really struck by how much the story just lit the world on fire as far as, like, women thinking about what they're engaging in terms of, like, what is a cheap luxury, right? This treat for yourself that you get. And the thing that's always interesting about manicures and pedicures, socially speaking, as a woman, like, it pretty much can unite anyone. Like, anyone from any background, any kind of job, you can go get a manicure with her, chances are.
Right, right.
It's true!
And it is a lovely experience, but there is also the skepticism you have to have towards any industry where essentially no white people do it. If it's a situation where no white people do it, you kind of have to be asking yourself, in what way is this industry exploitative?
But I'm surprised when I get a manicure from a white person and I'm judging it hard.
Yeah, it does make you wonder, right?
Yeah.
But then I also
How
thought
skilled
what was...
are you?
What was interesting about this story is that I don't even know if it would have been done 10, 15 years ago, because I think women of color, immigrant workers are like the most invisible member of society. And I feel like the reporter stumbled on this story because she's a woman who is getting a manicure, and she asked the woman who is giving it to her, like, who works the night shift? And the woman said, I work the night shift.
But how much is she getting paid a day?
The woman giving the manicure?
Yeah.
I mean, they say that, like, they get $2 an hour. Like, below minimum wage. Yes.
I would have said that 10 to 15 years ago, the story would have been focused more on garment workers back when we used to make clothes in the U.S. Mm-hmm. But since that's all been offshored, that's not a story anymore.
Right. We've moved our exploitation offshores.
Right.
Now we're focused on shitty service jobs.
You know what, though? My nail shop, Pampered Hands on Melrose, they do a fantastic job. They seem to run a clean shop. And I can't imagine these women get less than $12 an hour. Not with the amount of the way it's set up there. I just feel like those girls, they're there for years.
Right. Well, it's not only pay, though. It's not only pay. It's like the chemicals they're inhaling.
Oh.
It's ventilation. It's hours.
Okay.
I mean, it's a whole, that's the thing about it. It had so many layers to
it.
I'm curious, as someone who doesn't get manicures or pedicures, if regulation or if better management of this industry, more responsible management of this industry, were to raise prices by, let's say, 50 or 100%, how would the people who are reacting to the article now react to sort of an increase in something they see as what was a cheap luxury becomes a not as cheap luxury?
Has anyone here ever gotten a manicure or pedicure in another country?
Yes. No.
I was in Australia, getting a mani-pedi just costs like 2 to 3 times what it costs here because people are making a living wage for doing it. And somehow, like, I became aware of that and it did not stop me from going and getting, you know, a $60 mani-pedi in West Hollywood. Which takes an hour and involves extremely, extremely harsh chemicals that these people are dealing with every day. I mean, like, it's, you know, it's those little sanding things that are basically filling the air with toenail powder.
Right, with micro dust and dead skin, yeah.
But see, now I'm now I'm concerned because now this is something that this is what I take for myself. I take this moment for, it's very important. It's to the point that if I run into someone at the nail shop, I'm annoyed because I want that time to myself to just be completely doted on.
And it's time that you're probably not even looking at your phone because you can't really comfortably do that. Well, yeah. Maybe you are. But I love that I can put away my phone for a little bit. And I think it everyone is asking that question, like, how can we fix it? Some people are like, well, should I just tip more? And it turns out other people are saying, no, tipping isn't going to help because that's just going to be more wages for the owners to skim.
Right.
So, yeah, it's like, who knows what's going to happen here? Although Governor Cuomo already has put in some emergency
task force to investigate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Margaret, you do raise the sort of fascinating issue with this, which is a mani-pedi is like the chattiest of experiences. And as we get to like Korean and Vietnamese second generation, the children of immigrants who are growing up with like much stronger English skills, that chattiness is going to teach you about what's going on. For such a long time, that language barrier in the pedicure chair sort of kept you from knowing more about what's going on.
It's so true.
I kind of disagree with that.
Why?
Well, I don't know, because there are a lot of industries where workers are being exploited, and it's not a language gap is not the reason why we don't either investigate more or care more. So I don't know if I would use that as the causal explanation for why it is that we haven't looked into this sooner. Go ahead, Clay.
I don't think it's exclusive. I just think that it is particularly well-suited to communication. It is a place where chit-chat goes on.
But yet not chit-chat between the person getting their nails painted and the person painting the nails.
Right, which is how the service industry works. Usually you're kind of paying them
not
to talk with
you. Oh, I talk to them a bunch.
Well, you do. But I'm saying, I think in general, some people want the solitude. They don't want to be interrupted.
Right.
But I'd also think that if you go to a restaurant, and I hate this more than anything, is being interrupted by a waiter who can't take the temperature of the table.
Right.
Like if I'm literally, I could be in mid the best conversation ever and they go, anything I can get? I just don't want that. So I feel like that's also a situation where it's, to me, that's a communication barrier. You have to be, in order to be a really great server, you need to be able to understand, you know, what your customers want and how to like give them their time and read the table.
The other thing I would say, this goes back to Guy's point, is that people who take these jobs and are being exploited for their labor usually do it partially so that their kids don't have to fall in their same footsteps.
Right.
So that second generation that you're mentioning, Guy, that might have better communication skills, they won't be the ones doing the nails. It'll be the next incoming wave of immigrants who are going to be more easily exploited for the same language reasons why this generation is. So I don't think there's going to be a generational flip here. I think it means that in terms of both investigators and regulation and all these things, we just have a lot of work to do.
We do have a lot of work to do, but I think with the nail salon industry, it's even more dangerous in terms of what will happen with the second generation, because part of what the article gets into is how many of these women have miscarriages repeatedly because of the toxicity levels.
Whoa.
I mean, so yeah, exactly. It is that hardcore where it's like, this is beyond, you know, coming into the country and working for really cheap, which is already bad enough. But this is like, one can't even get their family off the ground.
Yeah.
One can't even healthfully
this
survive.
This is bad.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Oliver, what are you all about this week?
Why do we have to follow that? You should have gotten
last.
I know.
Last. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm all about something not
going to bring it heavy and real.
No, I like it.
No, we start off that way. So I was going to do this last week, but I'll do it this week, which is the NBA playoffs. So I guess this was what makes me Sporty Spice, since I'm the only person who probably cares about this. But it has been...
I still insist you are a posh.
All right, whatever.
Sporty. That's fine. I say sporty.
I'm good with that. I'm sporty posh. I'm poshy sport. Whatever. I mean, this has been one of the best NBA regular seasons in, I think, recent memory. And while the playoffs, I don't think, have lived up quite to the oversized expectations that people had for it, which was going to be every series was going to go seven games. You know, it's going to be incredible play on all sides. I mean, there's been a lot of sloppy games. There's been games where it barely resembles basketball. But we've seen, especially this past weekend, where you had three games decided by the last second shot, two of them banked in off the glass from 3-point land. It's just been a great series of weeks for basketball. We're only halfway through it, which my wife is going to be really bummed out to realize, because I could be doing this for another month basically for now. But if you are a fan of basketball, this has been one of the most sort of glorious years or seasons that you could possibly ask for. And, I mean, we're nowhere near being done yet.
So where are we at now?
We're only in the second round.
Wait, so
there's
who's
two more
playing?
Rounds. Right now, let's see, there's four series. There's the Grizzlies and the Clippers, which has been a fantastic series, though Grizzlies and Warriors, Clippers versus the Rockets. And then it's the Hawks versus the Wizards and the Bulls versus the Cavs.
Ooh.
And at least half of those series are super great. The other half are just okay.
I feel like you're talking about Warriors the movie right now.
Yeah. Come out and play.
But, you know, a lot of people thought the Warriors would have just a cakewalk into the finals. And they have a really tough opponent with Memphis. And so that's been, a really, really great competitive series.
I didn't even know Memphis had a team.
Well, they originally from Vancouver. I don't know if there are actually Grizzly Bears in Memphis, but, you know.
I take it as not the Grizzlies.
Well, which
the
one?
Memphis Grizzlies.
It is the Memphis Grizzlies.
Really?
Yeah, but.
Are there Grizzlies in Memphis?
No,
have to
the
do
team
with
is
Grizzly anything.
The team is originally from Vancouver, which
yeah.
is
okay,
it's like how you get the Utah
there
Jazz.
There aren't lakes in Los Angeles either.
There's no lakes in Los Angeles either, guy says.
Right.
This is a good point.
Right.
Good point. Touche.
Although there's Silver Lake and Hollywood.
Yes.
Lake.
True.
Well, here's a question. If you were to rename the LA team for something that was appropriate to the area, what would you come up with? And I pose this question to people, and no one has a great answer for that.
Ooh, we should do that for next
the
week.
The fake boobs.
LA fake boobs.
The LA plastic.
Broken dreams. The LA
broken
dreams.
Broken dreams.
The LA nightmares.
Starting broken teams. Dreams.
Winner, what are you all about this week?
I'm all about Grace and Frankie. The Netflix show with Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda is amazing. It's so good. It's basically like The Odd Couple, but if they were ladies.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, and they're just like ladies of a certain age. And they look, I mean, Jane Fonda looks spectacular. Like, she's the only person who committed to a fitness craze and has seen it the entire way through, because she had a nightie on in one of the episodes and I was like, I did a double take.
Well,
I had
like,
to
damn.
Pause. I was like, damn, Jane. Like, she
that woman's 70.
70. And in the, no, she's 77.
What?
Jesus.
Yeah. So I didn't know this. I had
That's
to
off.
Google. She plays a 70-year-old in the show. She could easily pass for 65, 63. Okay. So that's one. Two, Lily Tomlin is so subtly brilliant. She's totally like playing into the role she's always kind of been given in film, where she's kind of like, you know, like Martin Shorty, but like, you know,
saucy and quirky.
Saucy and quirky. And she's really, this is like Violet from 9 to 5 ended up just like marrying a really amazing black dude, and he like made her all hippie and just turned her out. So the whole show is about them dealing with the fact that their husbands have not only been business partners for the last 40 years, but they've also been lovers. And they get married. They're going to get married. So the whole show is the lead up to them getting married. And it's, I mean, I'm not spoiling anything. So if anybody gets mad about it, you know, write a letter to Congress. The whole, you know, it's on Netflix. So it's a whole binge watch type situation. So the Martin Sheen and Sam Waterston play the husbands. And then they have together four kids. So the kids are all adults and they're hilarious.
Now, wasn't there some controversy about Martin
pay.
Sheen? Yes, Martin Sheen and who was the other man you mentioned?
Martin Sheen and Sam Waterston.
Yeah, both getting more pay than...
No, no, they're getting equal amount of pay,
equal.
Even though
less
Jane
screen
and...
time, though.
No, they're sure about the same much. Okay. Jane and Lily are the executive producers.
Oh.
And stars, and they're just on the show. So, yeah. I mean, and now you kind of touched on this in your topic. They're opening up, the ACLU is opening up into this whole, you know, gender pay situation and the hiring practices of Hollywood studios and everything. I mean, like, this is about to explode. So, yeah. You know what I like about that whole issue, though, is that they're old enough, acclaimed enough, and have done all they need to do for Hollywood at this point that they were like, fuck it, we're totally going to blow the lid off of all of this. They could have been quiet. They could have negotiated.
But yeah, why would they?
Why? You don't have to. You're Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin. You're
free. Yeah, what do you have to lose? Yeah.
The ACLU case is more about behind the camera stuff, isn't it?
It's directors, mm-hmm. yeah. Specifically, yeah. the fact that like there was only 4% of all movies last year were directed by women, something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. So they're finally like, okay, this is obviously a ridiculous hiring practice
yes.
that wouldn't sustain anywhere else.
There's the thing of everyone's so proud of themselves because they're going to Ava DuVernay for a superhero movie, but it's like either Captain Marvel or like it's either a black superhero or a female superhero. It's like you can go direct this niche film.
Yeah,
you're right.
This is all you know how to do. But okay, anyway, back to Grace and Frankie.
How much Baron Vaughn do we get?
Who was Baron Vaughn?
He's my friend, and he's the black son-in-law.
Oh, he's the black son-in-law? You get a lot of him. He's pretty great. I hadn't wikied it yet because I was trying to enjoy the experience, so I'm sorry, Baron Vaughn, if you're listening, but you're fantastic. Ethan Embry's in it, too, whom I love. He's so awesome, and he plays his brother. They play brothers, and he plays a recovering alcoholic. It's very nuanced and just cute, and it's very and there's a lot of sex. I like that they have so much sex. You know me, I'm very sex positive, but I also like that you're promoting that women of a certain age still want to feel sexy and sexual. There's a whole thing about yams and lube. It's all funny. They're just so subtly funny and just like
yams
great.
And lube.
Yams and lube.
I just worry about Sex and the City 2 ruining the sexual impact of yams for us all.
Oh no, this brings it back and it empowers it because Jane Fonda's character.
Yams get empowered?
Yes, okay. Because
Jane
Fonda gets replaced on one of the products that she owns a beauty company, and then they decide that she's going to be the face of the yam lube.
Okay.
So,
yam lube just does not sound appealing in the bedroom. That's all I'm going to say.
All for it. Send me a box.
Back away from
that's
the
slowly. Enough, yeah, that's enough yam lube talk.
I know what I'm having for dinner tonight.
This week, I am all about an article on The Toast. Margaret, how much do you love The Toast?
Oh, so much. When they do that whole, like, art history, like, what is it? Like, women tired of listening to men in art history? And then
yes.
they have all those great captions under the paintings. I love it.
So The Toast is a blog that's primarily spearheaded by Mallory Ortberg from Oakland. And it's a very fun humor blog that's like made by women with sort of it's not Jezebel. It's not all about politics. It is just about this very whimsical feminine approach to comedy, and particularly like a specific vein of comedy that I love so much that I had never really seen kind of like explored in this way. But it really is like comedic riffs on all the shit you learned in your liberal arts degree. Like the article that like tore me up this week was Ayn Rand's The Babysitter's Club, which is just like rewrites five or
gotta
six passages.
Gotta get that money if you're babysitting.
Exactly. And it's like arch and magnificent and sort of like it takes for granted equally that you will be familiar with objectivism and the plots of The Babysitter's Club. and it's really kind of an exciting, I don't know, statement of what's possible from blog comedy. Like you've like the stand-up world, the sketch world, the improv world, like women are never getting to sort of like be talking for our, like, write stuff to be consumed by women without having to care about men being there and paying attention. It's also just so unapologetically smart. I love Mallory Ortberg, even though she barely responds to me on Twitter.
This will change after this show.
This will change. Everybody hashtag Mallory respond to guy after this episode. Why, and then tag her and him. You know what to do. And then let's see what happens.
I don't want to seem that desperate.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I am a desperate fanboy.
Whatever. Let's just do it.
All right, you guys. We're listening to Pop Rocket. We will be right back to talk about lost TV shows after this.
Hey, folks, this is Kevin Allison. If you love Maximum Fun Podcast, but you don't yet know about Risk, you don't know what you're missing. Check us out. Risk is the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share in public. So it's kind of like This American Life or The Moth, but way, way more uncensored. On Risk, we say nothing is inappropriate until something is. Every episode is an emotional roller coaster. Hilarious stories, shocking stories, horrifying stories, heartbreaking stories, tear-jerking stories. Risk is just jam-packed with stories you'll never forget, many from people you already know and love. So find us at iTunes or at risk-show.com or, of course, at MaximumFun.org. Risk!
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum, off in Brooklyn, but over in the studio in Los Angeles are...
Winter Mitchell.
Margaret Wappler.
Oliver Wang.
All right. Well, this week, one of the biggest hits of the past 20 years on television announced that it is going away. Winter Mitchell, American Idol is leaving us. Talk to me about it.
American Idol's leaving us, guys, as well as a bunch of other shows. But before we get there, in honor of American Idol's historic rise and collapse, much like another Hallmark institution, I want to play, is this an Idol winner or a member of Congress?
Ooh, this is going to get hard.
All right. Round one. Vern Buchanan.
I'm guessing Congress.
Congress.
I'm going to say... Congress.
Okay, you guys are good. He's a congressman. Taylor Hicks.
American Idol. No question.
Okay. Kevin McCarthy.
Sounds like a Congress name, but only because I'm thinking McCarthy.
Same.
He's a congressman.
Who's been on Idol?
No.
Who won Idol season
number? You guys are better than I thought you'd be. David Cook.
Oh.
Ooh. Idol? Yeah, I think Idol.
Yeah, he was Idol. That was the season I watched.
Oh, interesting. Okay, Sheila Jackson Lee.
Congress.
There's only like three women in Congress, so I'm just going to say Idol.
Sheila Jackson Lee does some of the stronger braiding work in Congress.
She's a congresswoman. Jefferson Sessions.
Congress, but should have been Idol.
Because it says Sessions. So.
Yeah, right. I thought I'd try to trip you guys up. He's a congressman. And Scotty McCreery.
Idol.
But these names are great. They could go either way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's
one
what
of them might
to
run
do.
For Congress. They should run for Congress with names like that.
Oh, what's his name? Ran for Congress. The gay guy.
Clay Aiken.
Clay Aiken did?
Yes, for Senate.
Clay
he won.
Aiken.
For Senate?
I don't think he won.
I'm pretty sure there's not a Senator Aiken.
No,
out there.
I would remember
didn't
this,
he
I think.
Win?
Maybe state Senate?
No, he ran for the House.
His opponent died.
Senate of like a restaurant or something?
Yeah. No, his prime.
Senate of Outback State House.
Maybe he's what guy?
His primary opponent died and he won the primary.
Oh.
But he did not win the general election, I don't think. Because he's a gay guy in North Carolina.
Okay. Because he was supposed to start out being American Idol. What happened to that? Stay on task. So a lot of shows last week just didn't make the cut. ABC's Revenge, NBC's About a Boy. Fox is the Mindy Project, but I'm indifferent to most of these shows because I don't even know what entertains the average TV viewer anymore. Shows that used to be super popular 3 years ago we're totally on the bubble this year, and that's like such a short amount of time to sort of, you get long enough. Usually if you make it past the third season, you get like to the fifth season, but some of these shows just didn't make it. So my question is, has the landscape changed so much that it's not really that interesting to build a relationship with the show on TV because we know the network's ruse, like we like it, they cancel it, or we hate it and it's 2.5 Men, or have any shows disappointed you then come back from the dead like a phoenix and improved? And then, you know, we can also talk a little bit about how some of these shows just, I don't even know why they were put on the air in the first place.
Networks have gone crazy.
Yes.
Like, the Coach reboot alone makes us all need to question what's going on in our world.
Yes.
I do think that the Coach reboot is just the crassest way of saying.
Coach? Yes, dude.
I thought Full Coach. House, there's Coach as
yes,
well.
Yes, dude.
Oh my!
I think it's just about the networks being like the only people who show up to watch television when it's on are 60-year-olds. So we might as well make a show that they loved in 1992. Mm-hmm. But I really feel like with this restructuring, the networks are saying a new era in television is starting. But I don't think anyone knows what that era is. Like, the last big change in 2000 happened because Survivor happened and then Idol happened.
Right.
And then we had that explosion of reality. Like, the only explosion we've had over the past 2 or 3 years is people watching the shit out of stuff on streaming services. And this almost feels like a suicidal gesture by yeah. the networks at their upfronts.
100%. 100%.
I do think they're panicking. I think the TV landscape has become so fractured and so wide open and so vulnerable to many, many different attacks and strategies from these other, uprunners like streaming sites and Netflix and all of it, that they are panicking and they don't know what to land on anymore. They're not quite as trustworthy as they used to be, that they can just lay on 3 shows on Thursday night and it would be must-watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't happen anymore.
I mean, I think at this point, the Mindy Project has such a better chance on Hulu than The New Girl does staying on Fox.
True. 100%. You're absolutely right. Oliver had a point.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, I guess the question here, number one, is this quick to cancel? Because to me, and this comes back to the question I wanted to ask us as a group later, which were, you know, what are the shows that you feel like overstayed their welcome? And the more I think about that question, the more I think that's, to me, like most shows overstay their welcome. I mean, is it criminal that we're not going to have Revenge on for another season, or About a Boy, or even The Mindy Project? I mean, is this a great travesty to television quality that we're experiencing at a time when there's a lot of other? I think the way that you would compare it is to say, how come this gets just, why does this get cut and not this other thing that really should get cut? But it seems to me that it's not like the networks are that quick to necessarily kill a show. To me, it seems like they're much more conservative in what they choose to keep on.
Well, I was just thinking in terms of like what you said about many shows overstay their welcome. I agree with you. And I think that is the exciting things about Netflix is that, or you know, any of these Hulu, any of them that are developing their own shows, is that they will just commit to 1 season or 2 seasons. They'll just try it out and see how it goes. Because not every show is meant to go for 5, 8, 13
and
seasons.
That's the most biggest. Most of them, you know, there was always that thing, you got to make it to 10. And now all you got to do is make it to 3 to be syndicated. And then also the whole issue with CSI being canceled, those people were making way too much money. And they don't have money like that anymore. They're losing advertising. And one thing I said to my friend last night when we were having dinner, and he's a showrunner, I said, basically, it would be okay if a certain show was like 3 seasons long and we were committed to those 3 seasons, and then we can watch them, you know, again if we've wanted to revisit, or they took a separate, you know, went a different direction with it. But I honestly, at my age, with the limited amount of time that I'm losing, I don't need a 10-year show that I have to keep watching.
This push to 5 seasons, 100 episodes for syndication is a model that doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Like, who's watching a UHF station that's showing? I mean, it's pretty much just TBS showing all of those 2.5 Men's. That's like, they're still making the crazy money of yore, but nobody else. And we built a machine that killed television. We built a machine that made it very simple to watch television without doing the thing that pays television to exist. So we're going to have to figure out some other answer to this.
That's exactly right. I mean, even when you say the word television, what does that even mean anymore?
Yeah.
When half of the time what we watch is on our computers or gotten through our computers.
I was stunned that the Emmys rolled over as easily as they did about Netflix and Amazon. That the Emmys didn't push back for TV at all. It's
well,
kind
that's
of crazy
still
to me.
TV. I mean, you're still using the television as a conduit to watch a lot of these things. I still need to watch some of these movies on a television, not my computer. But they need to switch up their model. They're not going to switch up their model because they have commitments for Super Bowls and whatever all the way out into the ether past our due date. And they need to actually pull back and reassess if that model makes sense. The model doesn't make sense.
Oliver, you were talking about the idea of things overstaying their welcome, and I think the problem is so much more significant with a scripted show just sticking around, especially a lot of the shows that got greenlit 3 or 4 years ago had a clear, the sitcoms, I mean, had a clear path for the main characters, and then they hit them, and then we didn't know what to do, particularly The Mindy Project and The New Girl. What surprised me about American Idol is that it is a format. It is a structure. It's a little bit like canceling football.
Let's talk about this.
Yeah,
where did Idol go wrong? Because I'm gonna assume that the group agrees that Idol could have been canceled 2, 3 seasons, 4 seasons ago. And we'd be like, yeah, sure.
I think Idol went wrong and I'm going to agree with Nigel Lithgow on this, hiring Mariah and Nicki Minaj. It became about them so much that it became like a desperate ploy and it was less about the talent. And there's less... And also, people get hip to the fact that these talent come out and only some of them reach this pinnacle. Even the ones that win don't get that.
Tiny fraction.
Really,
that's
Clarkson,
what I think.
And
Carrie Underwood and Jennifer Hudson. Those three.
Yeah.
And
I mean, but that's the thing is I think the myth just got tarnished with American Idol. Mm-hmm. There is a certain idea that people came out of the middle of Kansas and auditioned and got into American Idol and became stars. And then the longer the show went on, it was like, no, actually a majority of these contestants have been, around the music industry in one way or another for a while. They just haven't gotten their break, which is fine. I mean, in a way, that's an interesting show, too. Like, is this going to be the moment that this person who's been knocking about for 10 years mm-hmm. is going to finally get their chance? But yeah, I think basically it, like the lid came off and we saw that it wasn't all that it was presented to be. I also think when Simon Cowell left, something
huge part of it.
Yeah. I think that huge cut into it. He had this very authentic, brash voice that I think worked really well with what they were trying to present as like this myth-making machine.
Mm-hmm. And it just made for good television. He was fun to watch.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Whereas
Paula was good TV. Paula was a terrible judge, but good TV.
Completely agree. And I think Winner's observation here about where Idol went wrong was, in a sense, they switched the format because mm-hmm. they tried to make it more about the judges in a way that didn't really work with the brand that they established, mm-hmm. as opposed to, I think the voice works and has managed to take that same format and tweak it and be successful, at least for now, because they do make it about the judges and the chairs, and it's a gimmick, but it's a gimmick that actually works because they sort of embrace it unabashedly rather than trying to make you pretend
well,
like it's something
else.
Well,
they have to get along, and they have to have a little bit of kind of like acrimony and competition.
And chemistry. They have very good
chemistry.
Yeah.
But they also all end up with the team.
Right.
And that, I think, is more important when you have a team that you're overseeing and that you're guiding week after week. That's the gimmick that keeps the viewer engaged. You don't really get engaged because I'm only engaged because I want to see what J-Lo wore.
Well, I mean, with a talent show, there is an issue of talent drain. Like, there just comes a point where there... I have a joke where I say there's no more undiscovered musical talent in America. And... You know, 17 seasons into Idol, I kind of believe it. Drag Race is the best example because it's such a specific skill set that Drag Race is now essentially just running out of queens who can sew and lip sync and be funny.
We need the next generation. We need them.
Yeah, really. We need to raise them up.
So,
but Oliver, let's go back to your question of what shows do you think of overstayed?
Before we
like
get to that question,
examples.
I want to come back to the original question. What shows were criminally canceled before their time? So, Guy, you first.
I mean, there was a lot floating around it, but like news radio, it was just hard for me. Mm. I mean, that was more just that Phil Hartman died. Mm. But I would say that and come back to me.
Deadwood. on HBO, The David Milch Show. I loved it. It was such a unique and insane concept for a show. This Western that was written with the most like poetic, out of TV land kind of language you've ever heard. And because it was just breathing on such rarefied air, they just killed it.
I would agree with you to assert, the only thing about Deadwood is that Oliphant, the more you watch the show, the less he was compelling as sort of kind of the one of the main characters.
Yeah.
And I think if they had managed to cast someone differently or rewritten the character, I'd be 100% on board with you instead of being like more 70%. I feel like Deadwood had a really good run.
I loved Alma, though. I loved that character so much that I felt like she could have risen up and taken over perhaps, but not meant to be.
Laura Dern's Enlightened. I really, really, really loved that show, and it was the first.
A lot of people did.
Yeah, and it was getting somewhere. It kind of had like a weird first season, but the second season, it was getting there. And as quirky and as ridiculous as her character was, I was. Sometimes the end of the second season is maddening, but I honestly felt like she was on her way to something, and I wanted to see how they explored that. I was really bummed out when they canceled that show because I actually thought I could watch that show for another 2-3 years. Mm.
For me, in recent years, I would have to go with FX's Terriers, which had Donnell Logue in it. Donnell Logue as the main star, and it was. It was handicapped by a few things. Number one, that the title made no sense. People assumed it was a show about dogs.
I was just going to say.
Which it wasn't.
Americans are so
It was sort of hard to kind of describe to anyone. It's like a sort of about like a pair of PI guys in a beachside city. That doesn't necessarily sound compelling on paper. But it was such a great show. Mm. And, you know, they did the most with that single season as I think you could hope for a one season show. But it's one of those things where, you know, if they brought Terriers back, I would be on that show in an instant. So, Guy, you've had some time to think about it.
I have my answer. My answer is Happy Endings. It was an ABC sitcom that was actually legitimately funny and had a lot of jokes, which is a thing sitcoms haven't done for with the exception of 30 Rock and Kimmy Schmidt, just haven't done for a really long time.
I love that show. It almost felt like that show was like a Three's Company. It had a Three's Company-ish quality to it, where it was kind of silly, but then also kind of, you know, about their friendships. I thought they were all so super duper cute. And now none of them have shows again. Again, they all each went and got a show, and now they're back to all being unemployed. It's absolutely maddening. I don't know how an actor maintains their sanity in a world this
fickle.
Like, they literally have been on 3 and 4. You know, Jennifer Aniston always talks about how she was on 7 or 8. You know, failed pilots before she got Friends.
I think a lot of antidepressants.
Oh, yeah.
These shows ain't loyal.
The most fascinating thing is to watch sitcom reruns from the 90s and see, like, Jennifer Aniston guesting on everything before she gets Friends. Or Deborah Messing guesting on everything before she gets Will and
Grace. Being in, like, five Law & Order episodes.
Yes.
Playing five different victims. Like, I love seeing that. Yes. I'm like, that's so-and-so.
Yeah, the victim route. That is, like, the milk and honey route for actors.
Yeah.
All right, let's unleash the gates of hate now. So what shows overstayed?
Ooh, Lordy.
Man.
I'll go first.
I got a couple.
X-Files. I mean, at the point at which you have to replace the main cast, that should
be number one sign.
Okay, this show needs to go. And I X-Files at its best was amazing. And by the tail end, it's like, just please put it out of its misery.
There are a couple of actors who are the hallmark of this show has been around too long. One of them is that guy who...
that like, guy. Once you're saying that guy, yeah.
He came on to Married with Children. He came on to Happy Days.
Oh, Ted McGinley.
The
show killer.
He defined it. But for me, it's Paul Provenza. Paul Provenza showed up for like,
who's that?
He's a comic. He was on the last season of Northern Exposure. He was added to Empty Nest later on.
Yeah, he's the utility guy.
So this is like the cooler in
Vegas.
Wasn't
he on the Facts of Life at one
point? Steps by the table and kills all the bets.
He's the cousin Oliver who just ends up everywhere.
Yeah, I think he was on Facts of Life too. I think so.
But replacing the leads really is the most egregious. I hadn't thought about that. That's a really good point.
I mean, CER
right, that's like
is another example,
soap opera
right?
style. Yeah. Just get a new lead in here.
Who was the other one? Oh, Two and a Half Men. The only reason I bring it up all the time is because that show essentially died when Charlie Sheen left. And I don't know why they couldn't make it work. I mean, it ended up not paying off for them, because even in the promotion of Two and a Half Men in syndication, they go the original Two and a Half Men as if the whole Ashton Kutcher era.
It's like New Coke.
Yeah. It's like insignificant. So, but you paid Ashton Kutcher like $1 million an episode to be on a show just so you can, what, meet some kind of quota? I don't know.
Was that a good show to begin with, though?
You know what? When you, going back to it, now that I look back at it, once I see what the outcome has been, yes, Charlie Sheen was too super strong, and his relationship in the chemistry with John Cryer was great. But again, it was a show that stayed on too long. They should have either made it work with Charlie, or they should have gotten rid of the show completely. I mean, it didn't need to be on this extra long.
Margaret, do you have a pick for Around Too Long?
I'm going to offer up a golden calf and say that I think The Simpsons maybe should just
yes, girl.
Tell it.
This group is going to be torn asunder here.
I know. I am sick
Margaret,
of
them. Remember when we had listeners?
I know, but set all those wonderful comedy writers free. Let them try out other jokes, other characters, other scripts, other ideas.
Since I was 8 years old. I'm 35.
How many times do you need to see Apu like sell a carton of milk to Wiggins? You know, like, I mean, it just...
It's been on a long time, you guys.
Well, that also raises the...
Well, no, Margaret, that does raise the interesting point that, like, this show that started out at a point in time and having Hank Azaria voice Apu was a thing we didn't think twice about. And now we live in an America where we all understand that's real gross. but it still exists because The Simpsons.
Yeah, it's a little, there's some problematic stuff there.
We're calling The Simpsons problematic, though, y'all.
I mean, listen, I loved it.
It's just been on too long.
In the 90s, I loved it in the early aughts. At some point, I just started to feel like this is just rehashing the same stew over and over again.
I haven't seen a Simpsons episode since 1999.
Exactly.
Margaret, my bringing up of Murphy Brown is real anticlimactic now.
Well, my safety pick was going to be Entourage.
Okay, I'm back in your good graces with
right,
that. I agree
right,
with that.
That was on just a little too long. And when I saw
it was
the,
good for 2-3 seasons.
Yeah,
tops.
Seasons, I'll give it.
Why is there a movie?
Can we talk
next episode? Why is there a movie?
You guys, next episode, I really think we should do, like, we have to officially go and see Entourage the movie opening weekend, each of us on our own.
No. If you're that guy, the four of us will go. But only only under those circumstances.
Yeah, only under those circumstances. We need a family field trip, don't you think?
Turtle Absolutely. Is skinny. That's all I have to say. And that seems often weird.
He looks great. You look good, Turtle. Can't wait to see right. Entourage.
We will miss you, American Idol, The Mindy Project, Revenge, and whatever the other TV show.
No, actually, we won't, but that's cool.
That was the whole point.
All right, you're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, everybody. I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Travis McElroy.
I'm Griffin McElroy.
And we host the first podcast ever made, My Brother, My Brother, and Me.
Every Monday, we put out the first ever advice comedy podcast ever.
They found our podcast on Dead Sea Scrolls.
We're the Hammurabi Code of podcasts, and we're ready to entertain you with jokes that we invented, the first jokes.
So join us every Monday on MaximumFun.org.
You'll never crack our code, Dan Brown. Just try me.
It's history in the making.
And in the faking. And it's all yours for the taking.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. Over in the LA studio, we've got
Oliver Wang,
Margaret Wappler,
Winter Mitchell.
And every week on Pop Rocket, we ask that age-old question, what's your current jam? Oliver, what's your jam?
Well, we have to, this goes out to our reader. Oh, God. Did I not credit her?
It was
in my
Brandy
notes?
Collins,
Thank
my
you.
Homegirl
Sorry,
that
Brandy
I went
Collins.
To school with as a child.
Brandy put this up on the Pop Rocket Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/poprocket, I think. I hope
Pop Rocket
that right.
Podcast.
Thank you. There you go. And it is from a star. I don't know if is that too
strong. Yeah, oh, she's
that,
she's
Is that
the
too
star.
Strong a word, perhaps?
No.
From Love and Hip Hop Atlanta, which I've never watched before. The song's called Stingy with My Kitty Cat. Sorry, Cuddy Cat. Let's take a little listen. So this features Stevie J, who I didn't realize that Stevie J was still with us doing the hook. And we have Jocelyne doing the title cut. Again, Stingy with My Cuddy Cat. She's managed to turn Stingy into a verb, which on a grammar level, I'm not sure if I really agree with, especially because I think that the actual quote is Stingy with My Kitty Cat, originally by Nicki Minaj, but that's fine. It's fine. You need to kind of see the video because, as Winter points out, you know, she's wearing electric tape over her fake boobs. Which Winter seemed was made it a bad thing. I don't really have a real problem with that.
We can talk about this at another date.
And look, this is not what you would call a good song, and Jocelyne is not what you would describe as a good rapper.
Right.
No.
She's sort of mumbling most of her words, but I still kind of like the
enunciation is not her fine.
Yeah,
she doesn't do that.
I like the beat. I like the drum fill. It sounds a little bit like the Peter Gunn guitar, which we talked about last week with Art of Noise. And I was like, you know what? For a song that's basically just all hook, this is not a bad hook.
Your recommendation reminds me of in the movie High School Reunion, Romy and Michelle, when she turns out and turns around and tells them that their costumes were actually great. I like the lines. That's exactly, I'm getting all of that.
But
the song I actually do watch the show.
So please explain to us who Jocelyne is.
Okay, Jocelyne is a stripper from Puerto Rico originally who got famous in Miami. And then she hooked up with the Atlanta crew, Stevie J in particular, and pretty much stole him away from Mimi. Okay. And Mimi, I don't
love you, Whopper. Love
you. And Mimi, ever since then, has been trying
Margaret,
to
Margaret, why
recover.
Don't you do Love and Hip Hop Atlanta recaps for us?
Yes.
Anytime. I am like sickly addicted to this show. It's ridiculous. Pretty much, okay, let me just sell it to you guys this way because I know you guys like Real Housewives. Okay, what happens in a season on Real Housewives is one show in Love and Hip Hop.
Sold.
Oh, wait, what happened to Winter's I'm allergic to Ratchet comment?
But I'm allergic to Ratchet, but I'm also... If I can squeeze the ratchet into 20,
you get
30
lawsuits. You get lawsuits. You get weave pulling. You get cheating. You get strippers. Everything you should want from a reality show. You get it.
I'm in.
Guy is stunned into silence.
Yes,
and he's also putting it on his DVR right now.
Reality television has taught white America so much about the emotional impact of weave track removal.
Right. It is the worst thing you can do to a fellow woman.
Yes.
Margaret, what's your jam?
I am going to play you guys Nadine Shah, the Gin One. So this will delight all fans of Nick Cave and PJ Harvey. She is English, but she has this Pakistani-Norwegian background, and her voice... Well, let's just hear some of it.
Hello, nice to meet you. I like what you've done with the place. Double gin poured to the rim as you memorize my face. Hey, I've been wandering around all day. Hey.
I like that she has this quality that's both like smoky and sultry and then like a little bit of Edith Piaf kind of trill in there. She has these hilarious songs on this album called Fast Food. It's her second one. She has one song called Fool. This is called the Gin One, but she has another song called Fool where she talks about meeting this guy who just plays into every single stereotype that he possibly could play into and happens to mention Nick Cave and predicting that this guy will have Nick Cave records.
I love her already.
Yeah. Good driving music. Like, you need to drive into the desert listening to this.
Yeah.
She also has just a touch more anguish. Just a touch more anguish than I am used to from, you know, your W Hotel elevator songs.
It's true. There's some like, this is like PJ Harvey is serving you your $14 cocktail by sloshing it in your face a little bit.
I love that we have official terms for tearing apart music here. It's $14 right. Cocktails and the four quadrants. Winner, what's your jam?
My jam is Good Night by Philip Owusu, who used to be a part of this Denmark sort of like hip hop, I don't know what you would call it, hybrid, like hip hop soul, neo soul hybrid called Owusu and Hannibal. And they're just really funky. This is like H&M music. If you're over in Europe, okay? Not
okay, that's
not
a good
American
distinction.
H&M.
That is an important
distinction. An important, thank you.
European H&M.
Thank you. But this song is has been my, I would actually go ahead and qualify this as my number one favorite song of 2013. And it also hit all four quadrants for me yesterday. Yesterday was a four quadrant day. So I would like to dedicate yesterday's four quadrant day to this song. This song is just beautiful. I love listening to it. And you can't find it on Spotify, and it's on his SoundCloud. And Philip has been working on this his solo album for like a year. And I like how he's just very peaceful about it. People on Twitter just go after him and like, when's the new album coming out, man? When's it coming out? And he's like, it's almost done. You know, he's just very...
taking his time.
Yeah.
I like those little atmospherics.
This song, I'm telling you, this is like the best song to everything, too. It's just such a good, like, romantic makeout song.
This has like a Sunday morning jam quality, too.
It's making me rethink what I think about H&M now.
Right.
It's just soulful.
Right. This is what you buy your silky black pants to.
Yeah. I was definitely feeling myself. I thought this was just, every time I play this, I love his voice. He's very sexy. I feel this in like my ovaries, you guys. Like I every time it comes
that's
on.
That's the fifth and the sixth quadrant.
The fifth and the sixth quadrant. Like what I feel. Literally the fifth and the sixth quadrant. I am like gonna have like a miracle birth at some point in the next like 15 minutes.
Yeah, this song will get you pregnant just by osmosis.
So by osmosis, y'all. Shit. It's such a good song.
This song makes me want to have ovaries.
See?
It has something to give everyone.
Yes.
You
guys, likes it.
If any of our official... I do. If any of our official jams get anyone in the listening audience pregnant, please let us know on Facebook.
Please let us know.
We need a Pop Rocket Immaculate Birth.
Call the Pop Rocket support line. We're here to help.
All right. And my jam is stupid, of course. This past weekend, I was... It's not stupid. It's just not music. I was at the Bridgetown Comedy Festival in Portland, Oregon, which is in the sort of burgeoning new world of comedy festivals that aren't Montreal. Sort of the best, sort of the most fun. And I had a great time and saw a bunch of comics I love and a bunch of comics I'd never met before who are really, really talented. But the founder and one of the primary organizers still is a really funny comic named Matt Bronger, whose album Big Dumb Animal came out like a month ago, and it's coming out on vinyl if you're someone who wants to own a comedy album on vinyl, which I cannot fucking imagine.
I'm trying to figure out what the sense of that is, but okay.
No, I don't understand, Oliver. When we got there, they gave us either a Nick Thune or Aziz Ansari album on vinyl. And I was just like, what are you expecting me to do?
Use it for cleaning your weed.
I love Matt Bronger. And so, Lindsay, if you could place a nice little jokey clip of a Matt Bronger joke from Big Dumb Animal on there, that would be lovely.
I'm 39. Like, that is so lame. That's such a lame age. You know what's a less lame age than 39? 40. 40's less lame, right? Because 40 knows it's 40, right? 40's wearing a nice blazer, still partying a little, 5 or 6 beers, a couple lagers, right? A little bit of weed, just a little bit, right? Just a touch of seasoning, like salt on your eggs. That's how much weed you have. And you're like, I got a wife and kid at home, but you kids party, all right. And like, see ya, 40. I like 40. 40's all right. 39 still trying to hang, like, I'm cool, right? I did some coke and smoked way too much weed, hitting on all your girlfriend. Like, get the fuck out, 39. Creeping out everybody.
Matt is so funny. He's such a deliciously good storyteller. He's so delightfully just affable in a way that I wish I could be as a comedian. So you guys should get his album. All right, you've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with the amazing talents of Winter Mitchell, Margaret Wappler, and Oliver Wang, who is back to us from his so long sojourn. Oliver, don't leave us like that again.
Hopefully not soon.
Not soon. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to Kitty Salamone, Selena 5498, Kiki 420, Jeff Arr, Joe Spacely, User 153. User 153, that is like my favorite name ever.
That person's going to blow up the studios.
Yep. Thank you.
And Shani Liz for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. It helps us do better on the iTunes charts. Get in touch with us on Twitter at Pop Rocket. Join our Facebook group. This week, tell us which Spice Girl you see yourself as and why. And please be more engaged with the question than about half of the panel this week.
And also,
Wiki Spice forever.
Also, you guys gotta follow us on Instagram. I don't want to make that more clear.
Follow us on Instagram. Also, I should probably follow us on Instagram.
Yeah. Maybe all of you should follow us on Instagram. How about that? Pop Rocket Podcast.
We're a production of MaximumFun.org. And this week, Lindsay Pavlis came in and helped us out by producing our episode. But our permanent producer, Colin Anderson, is back home in England this week. And our hearts and our minds are with him, and we love him. So
and love you, Colin. We miss you, Colin.
We miss you.
Godspeed.
Thinking and caring about Colin right now. Thanks a lot. Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.